From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. What a great weekend, weather-wise, in the Northeast anyway. We have a lot to discuss today. I was prepared to do one type of show, and then in yesterday afternoon it became another assassination show. I'll talk to Jason Riley about that, Wall Street Journal columnist, Manhattan Institute fellow. Standing by is Chris Swecker to break it all down for us. And we have a lot to report there. We got the election and so much more. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three. As of today, there is not one member of the United States military who is in active duty in a combat zone in any war zone around the world, the first time this century.
Really? ABC Crackerjack fact checker moderators let Harris get away fact-free as she proclaimed no American service member in harm's way. Should we whisper that to the sailors in the Red Sea when our three aircraft carriers, the soldiers in Iraq, 2,500 strong, the 900 in Syria, the special forces in Africa? The blowback is beginning to boil over.
Number two.
The reality is that she didn't address the most important issues that are affecting the election, which is the economy and the border. And she didn't address it, which is why the polling isn't moving.
Ryan Priebus weighs in yesterday on ABC. Nothing's changed. That's what the polls indicate after the presidential debate. And Kamala Harris does her first solo sit down. And it's an epic disaster.
Number one.
The Secret Service agent that was on the course did a fantastic job. And he was able to spot this rifle barrel sticking out of the fence and immediately engage that individual.
Sheriff Rick Bradshaw of West Palm Beach weighing in and giving us the details. Unlike what happened with the first assassination attempt, about what happened yesterday afternoon at Mar-a-Lago golf course. Assassination attempt number two, more questions than answers. The good news is the whacked out would-be killer is alive. So if investigators are smart, they would keep us all informed this time. Clearly, this is an epic fail by the Secret Service, who show great guts in some cases, but planning, not so much. Chris Swecker is the expert. He's a former FBI assistant director. Chris, I know you were on yesterday. Always appreciate your insight on everything, especially this. From what you see, what area was the greatest fail that this would-be killer was able to get his barrel through that fence?
Yeah, good morning, Pete. Brian, I'm sorry. Two things stick out to me. One is, how did that killer, that would-be assassin, know to be at that place at that time? So that speaks of possible surveillance on Trump, which should have been detected, or two, someone on the inside passed some information. Secondly, although I think the Secret Service benefited from some of the scrutiny and embarrassment from the last assassination attempt, and I think they were much quicker on the trigger, if you will, in not hesitating to take the shot when they saw the danger, which, unlike Butler, but they, you know, again, they're walking out on the golf course. In the golf course area, nobody's walking the fence line. Nobody's paying attention to the two roads that are in very close proximity to the golf course, separating from the golf course only by a big hedgerow. So you have to wonder, gosh, the danger is going to come from that area, not from the golf course itself. So why isn't somebody walking that fence line and making sure that nobody set up a sniper's nest like this guy did? And, you know, he intended to take a close-in shot. You could tell by the way he set up his nest.
I want you with Sheriff Rick Bradshaw. He actually answered questions. I found that really refreshing. I don't know if the FBI is going to try to stop them from doing this, but he was just on with me a half hour ago on Fox and Friends 2. Cut three.
How far away was Donald Trump when this gentleman was caught and stopped?
Probably between 300 and 500 yards. But with a rifle and a scope like that, that's not a long distance.
So Chris, I'm going to ask questions that shows I didn't go to the police academy, so I hope you don't mind. So they're walking towards the would-be assassin. So why would, if he was going to plan that much to stick, he have hooks on his bag and his plates that look like to be armor. If he was going to sit there and plan that much, why wouldn't he wait for him to turn the corner and get closer? What is the mindset of these assassins?
Yeah, I think it was intention. His intention was, I believe, the way the nest was set up was to take a close-in shot. You know, I don't think there's any evidence yet that he fired the would-be assassin fired a shot.
No, but the barrel was through the fence. So if you're going to put your barrel
right.
through the fence, don't you
right.
don't you say to yourself, I'm going to take a risk. I'm about to shoot. So
yeah,
unless he's practicing. Yeah. I mean, is he aiming?
Yeah, I mean, he could have been just setting up his shot. I don't think he intended to take a 500-yard shot. I think he was setting up his nest and positioning himself so that when Trump turned the corner from the fourth hole to the fifth hole tee, fourth hole green to the fifth hole tee, that he would catch him in a vulnerable moment in a much closer in shot, because you can see how those backpacks were hung from the fence and the GoPro was hung from the fence. It was hung straight out. It wasn't angled towards the fourth hole. It was hanging straight. You know, they were positioned so that he would take a shot as Trump drew parallel to him. That's my read on it. And I was a SWAT team member in Miami, and you know, I know a little bit about the sniper position. And so I think that was his intent.
This is what the USS the Secret Service Miami field officer Rafael Barros said about. The surveillance around mm-hmm. The protection around the president. Cut five.
It was one or two holes behind. That because the bubble moves through the golf course, so our agents will get there first, clear it. He noticed that the rifle was pointing out. Our agents engaged. We are not sure right now if the individual was able to take a shot at our agents, but for sure our agents were able to engage with the soldier.
So what I thought was interesting, too, is because you always hear the thing about being a city cop is, yeah, you got to be a good shot because usually there's people around. So when you have
right.
somebody who's robbing a store or committed a murder, they're running, but there's other people around. So think about when I think about a guy with a barrel through the gun, he knows the streets on the other side of that fence. So I'm taking a shot. I could hurt a pedestrian, but this is my thing is it's worth the risk. What are you thinking, Chris Swecker? Would you have done the same thing?
Yes. I mean, the rules of engagement are you can fire your weapon in the line of duty to save your life or someone else's life. And in this case, I think he made the right decision. And, you know, this is the former president and a possible assassination attempt. I think in this case, he was right not to hesitate and take the shot. But let me go back to what you talked about earlier, the sheriff's talking and
yep.
whether the FBI is going to muzzle him. I think they will. He's most sheriffs are more politician than they are law enforcement, and so they're always in front of, you know, they like being in front of the cameras and they like talking. But there's a prosecution to protect here, and I think as a former assistant DA and looking at it from the FBI perspective as well, I think they're going to try to quiet him down because you want all your witnesses to have independent recollection of what they saw or what they heard or their involvement. You don't want them to recollect from media reports or what the sheriff is saying from the podium. So I wouldn't be surprised if the FBI didn't muzzle him pretty quickly. And you notice the FBI has not put anything out. They know whether that gun was fired by now. They know a lot about this suspect right now. We're just not hearing about it because they're trying to protect their prosecution.
Let's look at the, let's talk about the suspect, Ryan Wesley Ruth. He had an AK-47. He was looking there through the golf course. Evidently, he's got a history on his Twitter account of saying disparaging things about the president. He urged Vivek Ramaswamy and Nikki Haley to stay in. He was giving advice to Joe Biden. He was direct tweeting him or whatever that is. He was giving advice to him on his replies. He did an interview in Newsweek Romania where an American flag shirt, talking about he needs to recruit for Kyiv. Said he went to Ukraine. There's no proof he ever went to Ukraine. He had this genius idea of using Afghan nationals here to fight in Ukraine. So he's also been arrested at least 8 times. So as well as charged multiple times. He was also holed up in his house at one point after refusing to stop on what they say was a routine traffic stop. So it doesn't seem like the most balanced life.
No, and I think he's a prime example of someone who will take up the take up the rhetoric. And he's actually quoting a lot of these Democrat talking points about him being an existential threat to democracy. So here's a guy that's, and there are a lot of them out there. They'll take matters into their own hands, and they think they're doing one for the team. They're saving democracy. And you can tell with this guy's history, he's no stranger to the law. He has no respect for authority. He had a two-hour standoff with the Greensboro Police Department, holding a fully automatic machine gun, and other offenses, property crimes offenses, and other violent offenses.
Right.
So this is the very guy, and as I said, there are a lot of them out there who are going to take up the message and act. And it's time to tone that rhetoric down. You know, talk the issues, but don't talk about, you know, he's an existential threat to democracy.
April 22nd, he wrote, democracy is on the ballot and we cannot lose. That's a direct quote from Joe Biden. I don't want to start there and say, like, every time an unhinged lunatic goes crazy and cites some obsession or something like that, you don't want to blame the person. But they had no problem. I looked Sunday night. Do you know what they were doing on Sunday night, 60 Minutes, with all the stories out there today? They're doing January 6th again. Like, we have to see this. We already saw Liz Cheney's primetime show. We've had a whole summer off from 60 Minutes. Then you lead with January 6th. And it just gets, I'm not saying there's nothing good about that. But to me, there's so many other issues right now on the number one magazine show. By the time you're done with that, if you didn't like Trump, you really didn't like Trump at the end of that.
No question. They're fanning the flames. I mean, they're always saying, hey, we want unity. We're going to, you know, we're going to be less divisive. Let's stop being divisive. And then the next sentence is Trump is a threat to democracy. You know, he's a dictator. He's a devil. And, you know, there are just too many disturbed individuals out there to take that risk. They're going to have blood on their hands before it's all over with.
Chris Wecker, our guest. Chris, before I let you go, just from what you know about the Secret Service and the setup, Mike Waltz said on Thursday they were briefed and they said that Joe Biden has given the Secret Service permission to bulk up for Harris and Trump as if they're president, give them that level of security. And then we hear from the local sheriffs and said, yeah, when he was president, he had much more security or Secret Service around him. And there'd be someone on that perimeter. From what you know, from what Secret Service is capable of, I know not everybody owns their own golf course, but should there have been someone on that block?
Yeah, when the sheriff blurted that out, you know, you wouldn't hear that from the Secret Service, but you heard it from him, and it's true. They have not afforded Trump the same level of security, not even close, as they would a sitting president or even Kamala Harris. They didn't give him the A-team and Butler, and they tried to take some measures to straighten that out. But let me tell you this, Brian. The Secret Service, I see them trying to make a play for resources. They have the resources. They shouldn't be allowed to take advantage of their own incompetence and failures here to get more resources. They are working economic crimes and all kinds of financial crimes, some of them minor financial crimes, because it's more fun to do that. They have about half of their resources working financial crimes because nobody wants to do protection. It's not fun. So they need to reprogram their resources and get back to their core mission of protection and give Trump now. I mean, the whole world knows it now. You got to have the full protection of the Secret Service, just as a sitting president would.
It would certainly help to see that not be an issue, to security not be an issue, because this is twice literally he's dodged bullets. And now we're going to have this huge distraction and they're going to talk about language. It would be great just to watch two people to run for office. Just real quick on the Secret Service, how much would it help to get rid of the college requirement and let, for example, some of our special forces who they get out and they're guarding other people doing private things, but maybe they want to join the Secret Service after. But if they don't have that college degree, I hear they can't get the job.
Yeah, I mean, I think the college requirement is a good thing when you're conducting investigations, when that's your primary mission, like the FBI. But when your mission is protection, my gosh, I mean, who's better than these special forces and these elite special forces like Delta and the SEALs, those forces that don't exist. They're as good as it gets. They're the gold standard. So, if you're a non-commissioned officer or you're someone with 25 years of experience in special forces in positions that are relevant to what the Secret Service's primary mission is, drop the requirement. I mean, they deserved it. They earned it, and they're good.
Go get them. Chris, thanks so much. Chris Wecker, as we find out more, I'll definitely like to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank
All right,
you.
Listen, I know you have a lot of questions out there. Also, I want to play some of Kamala Harris's interview with that local Philadelphia anchor. Did a fine job. The answers the Philadelphia anchor got were so terrible, was so inarticulate. It should really be a warning sign for anyone who has not made up their mind yet to vote or is going to vote for Harris. She is not equipped, and she can't handle it, and her people know it. You'll hear it. Jason Riley at the bottom of the hour, and then we'll get calls now, and then right after that, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown. Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Do you expect to hear anything from the Trump campaign about toning down the rhetoric, toning down the violence? Or would that be atypical of the former president?
Well, Alex, remember back to the assassination attempt on President Trump's life and how, you know, there was talk of a new tone. And it did seem like he was, you know, just trying to take it down a few notches. But then by the end of his convention speech, you know, we were kind of back to where we started.
Do you believe this? That's Alex Witless of MSNBC. And she comes out and they're asking questions. Should President Trump turn down his tone? Look, it's never a bad idea to turn down the tone. You could be direct without it. I don't think that's a bad idea. But it has nothing to do with this assassination attempt. In fact, this guy's a Democrat. He donated to Act Blue. He supported Joe Biden. He was against Donald Trump. He said he voted for him in 2016, against him since, though he did a terrible job, urged other people to run against him, and then cited that that Trump is a threat to democracy, quoting exactly what Joe Biden has said. And now you use that moment to criticize Trump after he was nearly shot again? Greg, listening in the Villages. Hey, Greg.
Yes, sir. I think there's some questions that need to be asked of Sheriff Rick Bradshaw. I mean, because that's not a road that divides. You have Congress Avenue and then Kirk on the east and west. And then where the shooter was, on the other side of those hedges is a canal and then direct eyesight from the Palm Beach County Judicial Complex. So I think Rick Bradshaw needs to maybe reevaluate his own security detail. I mean, my goodness. I mean,
Do you think he's in charge? Don't you think the Secret Service puts them there and says, hey, I need local to handle this or not local to handle it?
Well, when Dave Ehrenberg told you that sometimes the inmates yell out to the golf course, it's true. It's because they can see people on the golf course. And so I just find it kind of odd that a guy with an AK and two black backpacks could get in there without anybody. It's just really bizarre.
It really is. But I just don't know. For example, you know, when they come in and combine with local police, the local police offer suggestions, but pretty much the Secret Service is in charge. So if there's no one there, if Palm Beach was asked to supply security on that fence line, I agree with you. But if not, the Secret Service got to fill the gaps. And then they ask Palm Beach to get there, or they use their own people, and money's not, you remember, money is not an issue.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. A little bit later, we'll be able to take some of your phone calls. We're following three major stories. The assassination attempt number two. The more I think about it, the more you look at it, it's actually more serious than the one in Butler. And then you look at what has changed in 2024, the sprint to 50 days and we're done, November 7th, probably go into overtime, though. What needs to be done on both sides and what's the ramifications of the debate? And then Kamala Harris, a disastrous one-on-one interview with this Philadelphia local Pennsylvania reporter, anchor, and no problem on his part. It was her part. She is as ill-equipped to answer any question as any candidate ever. Local office or national office? Jason Riley, you join us now. Jason, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Jason, first off, your reaction to what we know of what happened yesterday afternoon at Mar-a-Lago, the second assassination attempt.
It's the Biden administration's responsibility to give the Secret Service the resources they need to protect former President Trump and all former presidents, and they're clearly not doing that, and that's a big problem. We already knew that Iran had been targeting Trump, and you could easily imagine a foreign power saying to themselves, we should go after this guy while he's still the candidate, because once he becomes president, he'll have even more protection, so let's do it now. So, I think that both Harris and Trump should have presidential-level protection, because the stakes are simply too high here, Brian, and I'm just shocked. I mean, this guy, how did he know Trump was going to golf there? How did he know where to set up? He had a GoPro camera. He had these ceramic plates that he was anticipating a shootout, Brian. He was going to protect himself with these plates and then stream the whole thing. That takes a lot of planning. This is very, very serious, and I don't think the Secret Service has been given the tools that they need.
So here's a couple of things. Number one, Michael Waltz said on Thursday they were briefed, because he's doing the assassination investigation of the first one. They were briefed that President Biden has ordered Secret Service level protection for Trump and Harris. And then the local sheriff said, there's no way it's the same as when he was sitting president. We got something to judge it against. Obviously, he was able to get over the perimeter. I do understand that that's one of the spots that photographers use to be able to get a shot at the president. That's evidently a traditional spot, which blows me away, because if photographers can shoot him there, an actual shooter could shoot him there.
Yeah.
And number three is, thankfully, this guy missed. But both times, it's conceivable that they should have been successful. The guy on top of the roof wearing camouflage 900 yards away, and then this guy between 300 and 500 yards away.
And that's not the only thing we're fortunate for. We're fortunate that a civilian saw the guy running away and had the wherewithal and the quick thinking to take a photo of the car and the license plate. That's the only reason we caught him.
That's 100% true. And it didn't stop other people from blaming Trump for this. Even though this guy is a Democrat, he quoted Joe Biden saying that Trump is a threat to democracy. Listen to Lester Holt yesterday, Cut 7.
Today's apparent assassination attempt comes amid increasingly fierce rhetoric on the campaign trail itself. Mr. Trump, his running mate J.D. Vance, continue to make baseless claims about Haitian immigrants in Ohio. This weekend, there were new bomb threats in that town.
How the hell do you segue from a live investigation into an assassination to a statement that was made at a debate that was just one of the many topics on the Sunday shows?
Exactly. And we saw this after the first assassination attempt. We know where the mainstream media is going to come down on this. We know who they're going to blame. But this is all the more reason for the Secret Service to give Trump the protection that he needs, because we are a deeply, deeply divided country. If, God forbid, one of these things is successful, it's going to lead to more conspiracy theories, which could lead to more political violence. We've got to make sure this does not happen.
Here's what Michael Waltz said, and he says a lot of this comes out of the statements that this guy would would tweet about. Cut 10.
This rhetoric against President Trump, this narrative that he will be the next dictator, that he is the next Hitler coming, it has got to stop. Enough is enough. Stop it on the left for doing this. It is bad enough that we have an enemy of the United States, Iran, with active plots to kill him, one of which was just stopped a few weeks ago. We now have multiple assassination attempts in a matter of months.
Yeah. So I would say, too, maybe both sides should do that, too. You know, Trump doesn't says right away she's a Marxist and things like that. That could spur some extreme behavior. But for the most part, they say that Donald Trump is unworthy, that democracy's in the balance, we'll never have another election. And then people think for the good of the country, like John Wilkes Booth, he thought he was doing a great thing for the country, getting rid of Lincoln. And he thought he'd be a hero. Couldn't believe how he ended up vilified and through time.
You're right. Using the whole existential threat argument is not helpful. That's not what we should be doing. But we are at a point right now where people view political opponents as the enemy. The enemy, like Iran, is the enemy. So is the Democratic opponent or the Republican opponent. And we've got to move on past that. And unfortunately, that's where we are today.
Yeah. So I want to get to your column because it's fascinating. The Supreme Court ruled affirmative actions run its course. It's done, which means you don't have a certain amount of ethnic Asians or African Americans or women. Just when it comes to college admission, may the best people win out. Why? Because Asians were being knocked out, even though they qualified, because a lot of these Ivy League schools said we have too many Asians. So what's been the ramifications when they level the playing field on admissions?
Well, what's happened is what we should have expected to happen. Let's remember, Brian, before the Supreme Court ruled, something like 9 states had already done this on their own, including California. And what happened after California did it back in the mid-90s is that you saw black enrollment at some of the more selective schools like UC Berkeley and UCLA come down temporarily, but it rebounded. But what you also saw was that black students system-wide throughout California, graduation rates went up because kids were being better matched with schools where they could handle the work. I'm much more concerned about what the graduating class looks like than what the freshman class looks like. I mean, the point of going to school is to get an education, to get a degree, and to study the field you're interested in. When you put kids in environments, in learning environments that they can't handle, they're more likely to drop out, they're more likely to get poor grades, and they're more likely to switch to an easier major. And that's what affirmative action was doing, mismatching kids with schools. So I'm not that concerned about what this freshman class looks like. I want to see what happens to black graduation rates in the long run. And the experience of California is that they will go up.
But they will go up. So I heard that the white enrollment about stayed the same. Black enrollment went down just a little bit. Hispanics went up a little bit. And Asians went up.
Well, different schools had different outcomes, and we don't know. And also, let's remember, as you know, these schools are very secretive about the process they use for admissions. They don't share this information. They don't share their procedures with the public. So we don't know. We don't really know even if they're fully complying with the Supreme Court ruling. Time will tell. So we don't know. But there were different experiences at different schools. At Columbia, for example, in New York City, I think the black enrollment went down by almost the exact amount that Asian enrollment went up, which shows that some of these schools were lying when they said that they weren't capping Asian enrollment to make room for other racial and ethnic minority groups at places like Columbia that clearly were.
A lot of it is this. You have somebody that gets in there, and let's say they're a black male or white or any type of minority, and they graduate, and they're going for a job. Everybody knows about affirmative action. That boss goes, yeah, you got into Harvard, you got into Yale, you got into Dartmouth, but how'd you get in? Because of quotas, because of affirmative action. And people hated that, especially people walk in there if you're black with 101 average and a near perfect score in your SATs. The perception is you're here because of affirmative action. And I did not realize that was such a big deal until that whole celebrity scam got exposed, where they were using fake backgrounds and put them in sports in order to get them into a school they had no business getting into. And then they said, now you know how we feel when Brooke Shields is walking the campus of Princeton or famous people are walking these other campuses. They said people perceived it because you're famous. You only got here because who your parents are or what trumped up or who they paid off.
Yeah, this has been going on for a very long time, the stigma attached to racial preferences. In fact, Clarence Thomas has written about this in his memoir. Back in the 70s, when he went through Yale Law School and then went looking for a job, people assumed that he only got into Yale because he was black and they lowered their standards for him. And he was talking, and this is the mid-70s. So this stigma associated with affirmative action, racial preferences, has been around a long, long time. And that's one of the reasons I'm glad the Supreme Court did did what it did, and because the stigma is a big deal. Who wants to be the token on campus? Who wants to be the token on the job, walking into the office? Everyone wondering how you got the job or how you got admitted to a school. And the fact of the matter is, it's not, as the old saying goes, Yale or jail. It's not as if you don't get into some top-tier school, you won't go to college or you won't get a good education. That's not what we're talking about here. So, I think the Supreme Court did the right thing. I am not at all concerned about what this freshman class looks like this year. I think this will sort itself out in a way that is to the advantage of racial and ethnic minorities.
And lastly, before we go, Kamala Harris does one interview. This is sickening. I haven't seen Tim Walz do any of the Sunday shows. J.D. Vance did three yesterday. And then he's doing them once a week. He's doing hard interviews nonstop. They don't put either one of their candidates. They put out surrogates who don't really know what the candidates stand for anyway. But now we know for sure that they have no faith in their presidential nominee, and we know why. Here is Kamala Harris in one of the simplest questions to answer. You would think that she could wake up out of her sleep and answer it. Cut 17.
Some people have a question, given maybe your current role as Vice President of the United States, how different you are from Joe Biden. And so I wonder if there are one or two spots, policy areas or approaches where you would say, I'm a different person.
Well, I'm obviously not Joe Biden. And, I offer a new generation of leadership. And so, for example, thinking about developing and creating an opportunity economy where it's about investing in areas that really need a lot of work, and maybe focusing on, again, the aspirations and the dreams, but also just recognizing that at this moment in time, some of the stuff we could take for granted years ago, we can't take for granted anymore.
This moment in time, there's that catchphrase. Do you ever hear someone so nervous, so robotic, so vacuous? What kind of answer is that? Just tell me where you're different. A few times I say to Joe Biden, I would have done this, I would have done that. He doesn't mind, obviously. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, she's got a bunch of canned responses, and she's been very disciplined in repeating them, and the press is letting her get away with it. Look, she's weak on defending Biden's record. She's weak on explaining her flip-flopping on gun buybacks or fracking or free health care for illegal immigrants, you name it. And this is an opening for Trump. Trump is a known quantity. Harris is still out there trying to define herself, which is why I don't think she got much of a bump after the debate performance, even though most people think she won the debate. So this is an opening for Trump, and if he can stick to pressing her on those issues, the flip-flopping and so forth, instead of talking about things like his crowd sizes, I think he can still win this thing. But he's got to show some discipline too. The media certainly is not going to press her on these issues, so he has to press her on these issues.
You mean can win this thing? So you think it's unlikely Trump's going to win?
Well, right now it looks like it's virtually tied. I mean, she's leading in the national polls, but it's a toss-up in all the swing states. I mean, it could still go either way. I think that's one of the reasons she wants to debate again, is because she thinks that's a forum where she'll do well or do better than him. She's not afraid of taking him on the debate stage, whereas I think Trump probably has more to lose from doing another debate. So, yeah, I think it's pretty much dead even. It's pretty much where it was before Biden dropped out of the race, I think.
Yeah, I think it's favoring Trump. Because it's close. Anytime it's close, it's within margin of error. I think it goes to Trump. The problem is when it isn't close. And right now, Hillary was up by 7 at this point, and Joe Biden was up by 8. Jason Riley, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Read about his columns, Minorities Reap the Benefits, When Affirmative Action Ends. That is his latest column. Writes for the Wall Street Journal. Jason, thanks. When we come back, we open up the phones. I'm going to play the other cut from Kamala Harris. It just shows you how ill-equipped she is to do anything. Not only answer the question, but there is no agenda. Someone else is going to be running the country if she wins. She has no interest in these policies. She just wants to ascend, which is not the type of service I think our country needs. I think we need somebody who wants to lead, understands the issues, cooperate when you have to, be bullheaded when you don't. Don't move.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We've been lucky enough to be in Norfolk, Virginia, on this great station, WNIS, for years. Who we've never heard been on for all 3 hours. And that started today. For the first time, everyone in Norfolk has had chance to heard to hear our show for 3 hours. We truly appreciate the vote of confidence, and we hope you enjoy all 3 hours, or at least as much as you did the other two. So thank you so much, management at WNIS.
When we talk about bringing down prices and making life more affordable for people, what are one or two specific things you have in mind for that?
Well, I'll start with this. I grew up a middle-class kid. My mother raised my sister and me. She worked very hard. She was able to finally save up enough money to buy our first house when I was a teenager. I grew up in a community of hardworking people, you know, construction workers and nurses and teachers. And I try to explain to some people who may not have had the same experience, you know, but a lot of people will relate to this. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood of folks who were very proud of their lawn, you know?
No, we don't know. What the hell are you talking about? Answer the question. How are you going to get inflation down? I grew up a middle-class kid. That's as dumb as the first comment you made at the debate, which you got away with. But this is what you're electing? Please. Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, you're going to tell me Al Gore? They couldn't have answered that question? John Kerry couldn't answer that question? This is the one interview she does. She is so nervous, doesn't know what she's talking about, and gets into her stump speech. Brett, listen, living in Albany, Indiana. Hey, Brett.
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
What's on your mind?
Well, I was just going to listen to everybody talk about the rhetoric, and I'm not necessarily sold on the fact that it's the rhetoric that's causing all these attempts on Trump's life. I think what you look at is the rhetoric's been going on for years, and I agree with the rhetoric on the right, because I believe that it's a dangerous time with Joe Biden in office, and I believe it's dangerous if Kamala Harris gets elected. But I think what you do have to consider is who these factions are allowing into their so-called political families. You know, if you take the conservatives, for example, you've got the conservatives with on the far right, you know, the white supremacists and the KKK. Now, the conservatives are not letting them into their faction. They're still separate from the conservatives, even though they're far right.
Absolutely.
They're left out of the group.
But the squad is very much in there. For the left. No doubt about it, Brett. Good point. Always like the Midwestern perspective.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. I know mine got altered big time when the assassination attempt came out, the news came through, and I thought it's going to be a minor thing. It's going to be disturbing because some shooting near the president, but turns out it's a major thing, and we're going to discuss that. Also, it's a consequential week. It's 50 days. 50 days until we have an election day, and a lot of you are voting already. I get it. Also, we got Michael Goodwin this hour and Dr. Marty McCary as well. He's got a brand new book out. It's called Blind Spots, When Medicine Gets It Wrong and What It Means for Our Health. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three. As of today, there is not one member of the United States military who is in active duty in a combat zone in any war zone around the world, the first time this century.
There you go. Dumb statements from the vice president who got away with it because the fact check duo, the ABC moderators, had no interest in fact checking her. Even though it was lunacy to think that they were the only people, there's nobody in a war zone. Tell that to the 2,500 in Iraq. Tell that to the 900 in Syria. Or the 3 that were killed in Syria and the 13 that were killed in Afghanistan on his watch.
Number two.
The reality is that she didn't address the most important issues that are affecting the election, which is the economy and the border. And she didn't address it, which is why the polling isn't moving.
And that is Reince Priebus knows who he's talking about. Nothing's changed. That's what the polls indicate after the presidential debate. And Kamala Harris does her first solo sit down, and it's an epic fail.
Number one.
The Secret Service agent that was on the course did a fantastic job, and he was able to spot this rifle barrel sticking out of the fence and immediately engage that individual.
And I agree. It's great for that agent. But why was that person allowed to put their gun barrel through the fence in Mar-a-Lago with the former president 300 to 500 yards away? Assassination attempt number two. More questions than answers, but the good news is some Cobb, Florida sheriffs are letting us know that it's okay to answer questions, and they're actually giving us some answers. And also, the other story is that we got the guy, and he's alive, so he's going to talk, and we know a lot about him. Nothing good. He's an absolute whack job almost his entire life. Not many people thought he was this dangerous, though. Michael Goodwin joins us now for the New York Post. Michael, instead of talking about the aftermath of the debate, let's talk about the aftermath of assassination attempt number two. What disturbs you most?
Well, Brian, look, I think that the most disturbing aspect of this is that there is still this desire out there to kill Donald Trump. And I agree with many others that this is a direct result of the media and the Democratic Party demonizing him, making him seem like some kind of devil, and the fact that he has such a large following. Let's face it, if he were failing right now by 10 or 20 points, chances are Democrats would just ignore him. But this continuing ratcheting up of the rhetoric that he's a danger to the country. Think about that. He is a danger to democracy. What that says, that's an invitation. That kind of rhetoric is an invitation to say, well, if he's a danger, he should be eliminated. I mean, if we can't lock him up, right? I mean, all these things that we've seen that the Democratic Party has done itself. I mean, the cases against him are an incentive for somebody, a little cuckoo, to go out and get a gun. I mean, they are doing all they can to eliminate him from the political process. Why should they be surprised that somebody would take it the next step? And, you know, looking back, Brian, it occurred to me that there are good reasons why no former president was ever prosecuted. I don't believe all of them were angels once they left the White House. I think there was something in the American system, in the American psyche, that said we don't treat our presidents like kings, but we don't treat them like dirt either. And I think that we are now entering a new era where the hatred is such that people hear the voice and they make it their own mission to go and act on what they hear. And so I really do believe this all goes back to the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC. I mean, if you watch MSNBC for a half hour, you might want to kill Donald Trump yourself.
Right.
I mean,
Joe Scarborough, even this morning, right?
Yeah, they paint him as a monster. Why shouldn't something be done? You're trying to lock him up. All the cases are falling apart. Well, then, darn it, I'll do it myself. I mean, it's not surprising to me that this is happening, and it wouldn't surprise me if it happened again.
So I want you to hear Lester Holt yesterday, someone I thought more of. Cut seven.
Today's apparent assassination attempt comes amid increasingly fierce rhetoric on the campaign trail itself. Mr. Trump, his running mate J.D. Vance, continue to make baseless claims about Haitian immigrants in Ohio. This weekend, there were new bomb threats in that town.
Right. Perfect time. Let's bring up the threats against somebody else, because Donald Trump was almost killed again. Alexander Vindman's wife, I know, who cares, but she writes this. No ears were harmed. Carry on with your Sunday afternoon. What's significant about that? Because Alexander Vindman is running to be as a candidate in Virginia 7. And don't you think that he'd come out and maybe apologize for his wife? He says no. Chris Lacevita said her husband, a candidate for Virginia 7, should condemn immediately. Instead, Vindman comes out and says, I condemn you. I condemn your lack of integrity, your lack of immigration, the desecration of the Arlington National Cemetery. Your candidate has incited political violence for a decade. He could reduce the temperament of this election cycle. But you MAGA thrive on bullying. Fact is, you're all weak. Nice tone, the day of an assassination attempt.
Yeah. Look, I think that's, what political violence has Donald Trump stoked? I don't recall any assassination attempts against any Democrats. Where is it? Where is it? They make it up. See, that's the thing they've done. They've made him out to be this evil force in American politics. And once you cross that bridge, why would you be surprised if somebody said, well, I'm going to eliminate the evil? He's evil. He's a threat to democracy. Democracy's on the ballot. All of that stuff is putting, in many minds, it puts a target on his back. Now, I think it's worth noting, Brian, that after the first assassination attempt, it does seem to me that the Democratic Party establishment has lowered the rhetoric. You don't hear that danger to democracy.
But you know why, though? You know why? Because it wasn't working. And that was a Joe Biden line. Harris said, I'm not going to use that.
Well, that's good because it was never true, but it was insightful. And that's what I think that the Democratic Party has to. Chuck Schumer, the Supreme Court will feel the whirlwind, right? Yeah. Schumer in 2016, it was stupid for Trump to go after the CIA because they have six ways from Sunday of getting back at you. I mean, all of these things that the Democrats have said over the last 9 years that Donald Trump has been on the scene, Trump is, of course, excessive in many ways in his own language.
And you've said it.
Yes, but I don't believe he's ever talked in ways that would lead someone to say that he wants so-and-so dead. He doesn't like them, but his language compared to theirs is restrained. I mean, it's weird sometimes. It's odd. It's out of place, and juvenile. But it's not calling for violence. It doesn't lead to the logical conclusion that violence is the only answer.
And that's
where Democrats have differed.
And this guy's been arrested 8 times, separate times. He's on camera now with Newsweek Romania. And I know he's on camera with the New York Times. So we're going to find out more about him. Besides needing Invisalign and a shower, this guy was willing to sit out there for you don't know how long. And if he waited a little bit longer, the president would have been even closer. That's the scary thing. But he put his barrel of his gun through, and he was shot at by a Secret Service agent that did not hesitate, even though many people would criticize if a civilian got hurt through that fence, people would have been criticizing him. But he said, no, this is my job. That's a gun. I'm going to shoot him. And it does not look like this, as of right now, they don't think the guy shot at all. The would-be assassin got shot at all. He just evidently dropped the gun, left his bags there, hopped in a car. A civilian took a picture of him, saw something was going on, took a picture of him and his car, enabled him to be stopped within an hour on 95. So the other thing that you wrote about, and we'll follow this investigation, it's not going anywhere, but the other thing you wrote about is Kamala Harris's sit-down with ABC. I want to give people, it's so abhorrent. And she's getting a pass on it. This is exactly why her people have no faith in her. Listen to how easy this question is and listen to her answer. Cut 18.
When we talk about bringing down prices and making life more affordable for people, what are one or two specific things you have in mind for that?
Well, I'll start with this. I grew up a middle class kid. My mother raised my sister and me. She worked very hard. She was able to finally save up enough money to buy our first house when I was a teenager. I grew up in a community of hardworking people, construction workers and nurses and teachers. And I try to explain to some people who may not have had the same experience, but a lot of people will relate to this. I grew up in a neighborhood of folks who were very proud of their lawn,
Are you kidding me?
Lawn care. Brian, a reader wrote to me after I quoted that line and said, I grew up in a middle-class household too, middle-class community. We didn't call them lawns. We called them yards.
Right.
I think there's something to that, right? Yeah. This is all make believe. Her mother was a PhD doing research. I mean, the hardworking. I mean, she makes it, you know, cops, teachers, firemen, whatever. That's not what her family background was. Her parents separated and divorced, but there's no sign that he was an academic too. There's no sign that they were out there, you know, digging ditches for a living or climbing telephone poles or anything like that. So she's trying to falsely associate herself, you know, with a class of people to appeal to them, obviously.
I don't even know if she worked at McDonald's.
Yeah, there is an issue there, isn't there?
Yeah.
Look, I think I just want to say one thing about the questions that she got in that interview. I think the guy, Brian Taff, I believe his name was trying very hard. He was sort of begging her for details on any of her policies. And so she just wouldn't give them. She just doesn't have any. She you know, I think Fox did a comparison of her responses to previous speeches. She's just pulling snippets out of her head, right? Partial things that she said before, she'll truncate and use them as. And you think, well, wait a minute, but that was a speech. What's the answer to this question? But Brian, if I could just add one more thing here to this discussion. The thing I wrote about in the column also is the way ABC plotted to trap Trump in the debate. And I use those words because if you read what Lindsay Davis said to a Los Angeles Times reporter in a glowing profile of her after the debate, she talks about how she and the producers and David Muir spent hours and hours and hours looking at Trump's statements and speeches, et cetera. And they then devised their questions to get the answers that he has given previously to similar questions. They devised their questions to get those answers so they could correct him. Now, they corrected him, as we know, five times. At least two of them were wrong. Their own facts were wrong or in dispute, at least two. And yet they didn't correct Kamala Harris once. They didn't challenge her on anything she said, even though she made many false statements. So this idea that somehow they were just unfair in the moment is true, but it doesn't get to the heart of it, which was they plotted the unfairness. They planned on it. They created the moments that enabled them to do this kind of fact-checking.
And Michael, you write it's an important point. And I think it's also important that Mark Penn, a Democratic strategist pollster who helped Clinton twice and Hillary once try to get elected, is calling for an investigation. He says, I want all their phones. I want to find out if they talked to the Harris camp. He thinks Harris got the questions. That's Mark Penn. He's the most mild-mannered, understated guy you'll ever talk to.
Yes, yes. And this feeling comes from the fact that something was wrong there. Right. So you just visually you can see it and you can say, well, it's just bias. I mean, that was my initial reaction. But when you read what Lindsay Davis said to the L.A. Times writer, it's much deeper than that. It was a plot. They went in there trying to rig the results, and they did. They succeeded in rigging the results. Now, look, we don't know what we can't know what the outcome would have been had they played it straight. But the impression that everything Harris said was true was created by the fact that they failed to fact check her. Whereas with Trump, the impression was much of what he said was untrue because of the moderators. We can't know how it would have turned out had they played it fair. But certainly Trump would have come off looking better if Harris's misstatements had been called out by the moderators.
Michael Goodwin, you're 100% right. And when we come back, I will play the thing that needed to be fact-checked the most that she's paying a price for this week, and that was her statement about the military and being in a war zone. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. Check him out on MGoodwin_NYPost. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back. Let's try to squeeze in a quick call. John's over in California. Hey, John.
Good morning, Brian. Hope you had a good weekend.
I did. We're back in action now. What's on your mind?
Brian, I want to tell you why I love Donald Trump and what he's trying to do for me and my family. The first assassination attempt, while he was on the ground after just nearly dying, he gets up off the ground not knowing if there was an Iranian hit team or a single guy got up there to expose himself. Now, I'm appalled at these former presidents at the DNC getting up there saying this. He's in it for himself. That's a lie, and they should be ashamed of themselves.
That's what they want. They want to say, I'm here for the people. Donald Trump's there for his billionaire friends. One thing that they don't push back hard enough, Trump's tax cuts and the things he did mostly benefited the middle class and the working class that pay taxes. So the middle class got a 1% tax cut on the highest rate, which was too high anyway. The corporate rate came down to compete with other countries to bring companies home. But he never pushes back on that. I don't know why.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Welcome back, everyone. Dr. Marty McCary in studio. He's a professor at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. You know him well from Fox News and author of a brand new book that's out tomorrow called Blind Spots, When Medicine Gets It Wrong and What It Means for Our Health. And Dr. McCary, you were one of the people bringing up during the pandemic. You say, not so fast. The whole time you were just saying over and over again, I'm not sure about that. Let's know. There's no definitive thing coming out of the CDC that you really were subscribing to. You got blowback, pushback, because you do not give in to conventional thought. You think independently.
Yeah, we got a little sneak peek into how our old guard medical establishment works during COVID. And it wasn't just they got this one thing wrong with COVID. It's they got the food pyramid wrong and peanut allergy prevention wrong and food wrong and so many things wrong. So, yeah, the conventional thinking was there was not really going to be a bad pandemic. They were not sounding the alarm. I went against that. And then once they came out with all their dogma about cloth masks on two-year-old toddlers and five vaccine doses for every 12-year-old healthy girl in America, ignoring natural immunity, saying the schools have to be shut down, it didn't come from the lab, all of that was wrong. And you don't hear a single apology.
No, none at all. What about the 6 feet? This is the most egregious. It was, they said, well, we say 6 feet apart. And then when they finally said, drill down, and I said, well, who said that? And it dated back to the pandemic 100 years ago. And there was no science behind that. And that's what kept the schools closed, right? Because you couldn't have desks in a school of 25 kids in a class 6 feet apart.
Yeah, cut the capacity of schools down in half. A study out of Brown University just came out. IQs have gone down 12 points. So we're dealing with significant consequences.
And all you were asking is think about that. There's a consequence to leaving kids at home protected. And the consequence is learning. No one ever cared about the learning.
Yeah, we said, look at the data. The data are clear from Europe early in the first summer of the pandemic that they were open, free, and clear with no downsides.
So you write Blind Spots, not just about the pandemic. Maybe it launched the idea, but to take on conventional thought. Because you believe that just because it's coming from the federal government, from our so-called scientists, medical professionals, it doesn't mean it's right. Why isn't it right? If they're the smartest and the best and they have our own interest in heart.
If you look at the history of modern medicine over the last 50 years, that is the track record of our American healthcare system, we have failed. Obesity now affects half of kids or they're significantly overweight. Autism goes up 14% every year for the last 23 years. Cancer rates in my field of pancreatic cancer have doubled in 20 years. The age of puberty is going down. Sperm count is going down. Fertility is going down. Who is stopping to say what is going on? Who's asking the big questions? Everybody's busy getting rich, and the healthcare system has done a terrible thing to doctors. They've said, put your head down, focus on billing and coding and short visits. We don't spend time with people. We don't talk about root causes, and we measure doctors by their throughput. Well, guess what? We have the sickest population in the history of the world, the most over-medicated population in this world, most disabled population.
You're talking about
America
or the continent?
America today. The United States today is the sickest, most medicated population in the history of the world, and it's the most expensive healthcare system. We need somebody to say, stop. What are we doing? What are the root causes? Can we talk about food as medicine and the poison food supply and pesticides having hormonal effects and the impact of seed oils? Can we treat more diabetes with cooking classes instead of just throwing insulin at people? Can we talk about school lunch programs, not putting every kid on Ozempic?
Kids on Ozempic? Yeah. You think that's happening right now?
The American Academy of Pediatrics is pushing to move the age from 12 down to 6 to start kids on Ozempic. And they just give lip service to lifestyle changes, behavioral changes.
What 6-year-old is obese?
We have obese 6-year-olds now because we've poisoned their food supply. Now, medicine tends to, and historically I get into the book in Blind Spots, we blame patients. We have this paternalism. Oh, everything is because of tobacco and obesity, tobacco and obesity. Well, smoking rates have gone way down now. And obesity is a symptom of another problem. Maybe they're not lazy or disobedient children in the United States. Maybe we have poisoned their food supply.
Is it intentional? Because maybe, like, if you look at Casey Means and her brother, write this book, and it's bestseller. Your book is already number 2 on Amazon. You can't even get it yet.
Yeah, second to their tomorrow. Book, yeah.
That's amazing. So what they're doing is they believe that there's a plot and plan. If you keep these kids sick, they're going to need more medicine. Everyone benefits. Big Pharma benefits. It seems like to me, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, you don't think it's necessarily intentional. It's maximizing profit. No one can stop the bus. No one has taken a step back and said, this is not working, but this is necessarily somebody pulling the strings on this master plan to destroy America or destroy our health.
We've let big ag, big food, big pharma run entirely unchecked. They have total capture of our regulatory agencies, capture of academics. I mean, when I was at the Harvard School of Public Health, the head of nutrition was all sponsored by all these food companies. And guess what? He never talked about added sugar. And he wrote the textbook. And so we have a corrupted academia, and we have captured regulatory agencies, and nobody has been paying attention to the fact that they have been poisoning our food supply. We have like 1,000 ingredients banned in Europe that are in our food supply. An average kid today, if you draw the blood out of their umbilical cord at birth, they have 200 plus forever molecules. These are chemicals that don't appear in nature. They are now everywhere in the environment.
And are they put in food in order to make the food last longer, be able to travel greater distances, and to preserve? So if I could leave something in my closet longer, I might buy it if there's no expiration date on it.
Yeah, that's been the argument. Longer. That's right. And so it does do some of that. So the food supply in the last 50 years in the United States has been based on food security. It's been based on addressing hunger. So what we've done is we've watered it down, chopped it up, added chemicals to the point where now it's poison. And somebody has to ask, why is autoimmune disease, why are they going up at a crazy rate now? 1 in 5 women will have an autoimmune disease. When you see these trajectories parallel the modern processed diet, you got to ask why.
But isn't there money to be made by asking why? So I'm fine. If you want to be like biotech, I think it's the perfect mix of marketing and medicine. Profit and medicine. Because I want someone to cure cancer. And if you cure cancer, I want you to be rich. And I want there to be money in it. So I want the best scientists doing it. So on its scale, I like the concept of biotech.
Yep.
So why isn't there a concept to stop this trajectory?
So we're starting to see that. And I'm optimistic where we're going. But we have to educate the public to create consumer demand for health. We've got to, and that's
happening.
I think so. I mean, that's why we're going to the public. Casey Means, Callie Means, myself, Peter Attia, so many of us doctors now, we're saying the medical establishment has been lying to people. They're stuck in their old ways. They're dinosaurs. Look at what they've been doing at the NIH for the last 10 years, funding bat coronavirus research in Wuhan. No, we need to fund food as medicine and pesticide exposure and these big questions. And that's why we're going directly to the public in our books to say we got to educate people about health.
So I want you to hear, and by the way, this is what Dr. Casey Means said about RFK, because he has a similar mission without the credentials, but a great mind.
Yeah.
And he wants to, if Trump wins, he's going to be in there. So I asked her about that.
What RFK really understands is the nexus of pharma, ultra-processed food, industrial agriculture, and government, which is keeping Americans sick, and which we need to unpack this nexus in order to make Americans healthy. He's hitting all the key points, the conflicts of interest in our government agencies, the lack of regulation around the toxins in our food, our water, our air, our homes. He really does understand the many factors that are keeping Americans sick.
Is he on the same path? Is that that's what's resonating, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what is connecting with people, because they are watching these chronic diseases go up and watching nothing is being done about it. Our hospitals get bigger. We create tens of thousands of millionaires in healthcare every year. And no one is saying, whoa, who's working on these big problems? Who is asking the big questions?
So let me ask you, too. For example, we always hear about peanut allergies. You can't bring peanuts into school, or the kids shouldn't be exposed for 3 years. And my daughter's a teacher now, and they say that. The same thing with allergies. I never heard that. Every once in a while, a kid would have an allergy, but we hear it now. What's going on?
So the modern-day peanut allergy epidemic, which is real,
you cover in your book.
Which I cover in my book, and where it comes from, it was ignited by the medical establishment. Dogma 24 years ago from the American Academy of Pediatrics that kids should avoid peanut butter in the first few years of life. Well, they got something tragically wrong. They forgot about immune tolerance, or the DIRT theory. If you're exposed to something early, your immune system learns about it and you don't develop an allergy. And if you get a little bit, if you abstain from it in the first few years of life, you're sensitized to it. So we have the worst peanut allergy epidemic in the world. It doesn't exist in Africa or in parts of Europe. And it comes from this dogma of the medical establishment getting it wrong. Do the study. If you're going to put something out there with such absolutism, do the study first.
So give me another example of example where the establishment's got it wrong and they can't stop. For example, penicillin or any type of antibiotic.
Yeah. So antibiotics, there's a dogma that, oh, they won't hurt you. You know, it may not help you, but it won't hurt you. Go ahead and take it. Antibiotics, especially in the first few years of life in a child's life, alter the microbiome, the gut lining of bacteria that are involved in digestion and absorption and training the immune system. And some of those bacteria make serotonin, involved in mood. And so we have this dogma that there's no downsides to it. Well, 60% of antibiotics given are unnecessary. And what's happening is it's changing the microbiome. And a study out of Mayo Clinic just found that when kids take an antibiotic in the first couple years of life, they have higher rates of obesity. By the way, farmers have noticed that for a long time. You give antibiotics to animals, they're fatter. Learning disabilities, asthma, celiac, attention deficit disorder. So the microbiome is the central organ of health. Gut health is central to all health, and it's been in one of the blind spots of medicine.
Isn't it rare for a kid before 3 years old not to get an antibiotic?
Yeah, 90% are. And most of it's unnecessary. Little sniffles. The parents are demanding it sometimes. People need to know. Sometimes antibiotics save lives, but they are messing with gut health.
Dr. Marty McCary is here. His book is out tomorrow, but you can download it or order it now. Blind Spots, where when medicine gets it wrong and what it means for our health. So the other thing that just sticks out with me, you just mentioned before we started, you talk about being a bureaucracy and the CDC being separate. But I remember vaguely, right before the election in 2020, it seemed Operation Turbo.
Warp Speed.
Warp Speed Turbo. What am I thinking? Operation Warp Speed yielded a result before the election. They had a vaccine, but they did not announce it till after the election. That could have been a boon to the former president.
I think it changed the election. I think it was election interference to hold the results until about 6 days after the election.
Did it blow your mind? As somebody
it
who
blew
was in
my
medicine?
Mind. I'll tell you why it blew my mind, because I'm a researcher. So when I saw the accrual and the intermittent analyses of that study, you saw it's headed towards this announcement of efficacy, and you saw the data points, and then this massive gap, and then this result that where it was overwhelmingly efficacious in that trial for the strain at the time. So it blew my mind that they changed the election, most likely, by holding those results.
Is the perfect example of this Anthony Fauci, a likable person who seems to have your best interest in part, but if he really did, he wouldn't be saying the things he was saying?
Well, there's a lot of Anthony Fauci's in the United States government and our health agencies. They're sort of the epitome of a bloated administrative state where they do whatever they want, and they can even influence an election sometimes. So it's frustrating. I mean, they're still defending the wet market theory that the virus came, and not even the Chinese believe that anymore, by the way. And
if they ever did.
If they ever did. The Wuhan lab leak was the greatest industrial disaster in the history of the world. 28 million people may have died from it. And they have put their heads in the sand saying, we don't think it came from the lab. Here's a bunch of scientists that we fund who we coerced to write a puff article that says it won't. And we're going to hold up their paper as evidence that we don't think it did come from the lab.
No, they did that. But do you think we could think we could change things? Like Dr. Casey and Callie think we could change things?
I do. I think we need fresh leadership. I think the public wants humility. A study just came out in one of our big medical journals, JAMA, showing that trust in doctors and hospitals in America has gone from 70% to 40% in the last 4 years. That's the biggest decline of trust in any profession in American history. We need fresh leaders, apologies, humilities, fresh starts, and finally talk about our poison food supply.
I want you to hear one more from Dr. Casey Means, because she talked about these Frankenstein foods.
Yeah.
In the 1980s, we saw skyrocketing of the ubiquity of ultra-processed food, and this coincides when Americans, and especially children, started getting very, very sick. So same playbook applied to a different industry, transferring the scientific knowledge of addiction from one to another as one fell out of favor. And now we're seeing what the repercussions of that are, with 75% of American adults over the age of 55 having a chronic illness tied to food.
So you can't argue with those stats.
Yeah, we can't keep playing whack-a-mole. That's what we're doing in healthcare. We're just looking at the end stages of all these problems that are manufactured. We take bread, and it's not bread. It's wheat stripped of its fiber, so it's no longer healthy, chopped up so it acts like sugar, and we get all these kids on a sugar high every day in our school lunch programs, and then we say, oh, they're bad kids because they overeat, they're obese. They're not bad kids. Their food supply has been poisoned.
And just because kids are overweight doesn't mean they're lazy. If they're eating things that are almost not digestible or they become instantly fat, they might be active as any generation. We don't know. And the one thing that stuck with me, I don't know if this applies, when you do, remember watching the history of baseball, goes back 100 years. And you notice how ripped these guys are. They had no idea about the physical fitness like we do. And I'm looking at these baseball players in 1940 and 1930, and they're ripped. And a lot has to do, it has to be, with their eating.
Yeah. African Americans used to be healthier than white Americans just two living generations ago in the 1940s and 50s, and we've poisoned the food supply, arguing that way we can make
it
affordable. Keep it cheap. And guess what? We've ushered in all these giant epidemics. So we've got to take a hard look at this.
Right, and you do in blind spots. When medicine gets it wrong and what it means for our health, Dr. Marty McCary, congratulations on the book, and I know it's going to do great. It's already doing great.
Thanks so much. Great to see you, Brian. Thanks.
Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I noticed that when you had Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, you gave them multiple choice answers to the questions that you asked, and you allowed them to answer the questions. I'm happy to be here to talk about policy, but if you're going to interrupt me every single time that I open my mouth, then why am I even doing this? So please, ask a question, and I'd ask you to be polite enough to let me answer it.
Yes, I am, and I think that if Kamala Harris and Tim Walz were making unsubstantiated claims that had racist undertones about people eating dogs and cats, and they didn't answer the questions about that, then I would have similar interactions with them.
Which she's missed is he answered it multiple times, that he got on the ground and he was talking to people and they had told him that anecdotally. So he brought that up to get attention to it in Springfield. Then people went crazy about it, became controversial. President Trump mentioned it in the debate. And then he came on and did three Sunday shows just to talk about it if they wanted. But you also talk about unsubstantiated claims. I mean, isn't that a pretty big deal what she said in the debate when she said there's no Americans in war zones? If you ever made Tim Walz available, him and his fake stories about his military past, that would have been a good topic. Know what's a great topic? Peekskill, New York, October 20th. Go to BrianKilmeade.com, History, Liberty, and Laughs, and I'll take your questions. We'll talk about the election, which will just be a week and a half away at that point. BrianKilmeade.com.
The Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right, everybody, welcome to the latest minutes of the big show. This hour is going to be a big hour, an important hour, as we are trying to follow many multiple stories. Of course, there's never a boring moment. A Sunday afternoon in the Northeast, bright sunny day, ends up being a historically dangerous day for the former president of the United States. We're going to talk to John Iannarelli in just a moment about that. Retired FBI guy, was a member of the executive staff of the FBI Cyber Division and a member of the FBI SWAT team. Also, a little bit later, we're going to go inside the media and their coverage of everything from Trump on down. J.D. Vance gets blistered over the weekend, does a great job sticking up for himself on three or four Sunday shows. No sign of Harris, no sign of Waltz. How is that allowed? I mean, why is it that only one set of candidates does interviews? Big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three. As of today, there is not one member of the United States military who is in active duty in a combat zone in any war zone around the world, the first time this century.
Well, our ABC Cracker Jack fact check moderators let Harris get away with that. She wasn't fact checked at all. And this is a big blowback time because the military is beside themselves with that inaccuracy.
Number two.
The reality is that she didn't address the most important issues that are affecting the election, which is the economy and the border. And she didn't address it, which is why the polling isn't moving.
Right. Nothing's changed. That's what the polls indicate after the presidential debate. The one and only. Kamala Harris does her first solo sit down, and it's an epic disaster.
Number one.
The Secret Service agent that was on the course did a fantastic job, and he was able to spot this rifle barrel sticking out of the fence and immediately engage that individual.
Sheriff Rick Bradshaw. Assassination attempt number two. More questions than answers. The good news is the whacked out would-be killer is alive. So if investigators are smart, they'll keep us all informed this time, not like the last time. Clearly, this is an epic fail by Secret Service planners, not the officers. They showed great courage, in my view. By the way, special thanks to WNIS over in Norfolk, Virginia. They are carrying all 3 hours of our show. John, welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Brian, thanks for having me this morning.
Hey, John, if you were to point out a failure in this operation from what we know, it's almost 24 hours now. What would you point out first if I was looking to fix what you saw when what was shots fired?
So the Secret Service and others keep pointing out limited resources, and I get that. There's a finite number of resources, but you need to be placing resources based on the threat level. I imagine today there's probably fewer threats to the president of the United States, Joe Biden, than there is to Donald Trump. I'm not suggesting you pull resources away, but we have to look at where the resources are being placed. And if necessary, reach out to other agencies like the FBI and put agents on the ground to put that perimeter around Donald Trump.
Yeah, I mean, it's expanded. Here's what Senator Lindsey Graham said about Donald Trump's attitude after the shots were fired and he was escorted away. Cut eight.
I've never met anybody quite like him. You know, he was in good spirits. The news had not broke. He called me, said, "You're going to hear it in a minute." I'll just let you know I'm fine. That's okay. And it was kind of hard to absorb that. So you're getting call from President Trump about an attempt on his life before it even breaks. So all I can say is this is, we've got upper game. Secret Service needs to go back to Treasury. They were one of the biggest elements of the Department of Treasury. And Homeland Security, they're a small group and a large agency.
Well, he was calm. He was complimentary of the Secret Service. He always has been. But how do you feel about that move? Would that make a difference going back to Treasury?
Well, DHS is massive. You've got hundreds of thousands of employees. Secret Service has something like 3,000 agents. And how much are they being lost in the mix and not given the attention that they need? Under Treasury, it was more focused. And additionally, you can draw on Treasury agents from other departments to supplement your forces. So it might be a great fit to increase what they're already trying to do.
I would love to see it. What about the fact is, I hear Secret Service agents need a college degree. And a lot of our special operators don't have one, but they're unbelievable at what they do. And they're great in situations like this. I think many of them will be open to joining the Secret Service. Would that help?
certainly it's something that can be looked at. There are programs and other federal agencies where you take persons who are warriors and worked in special ops, and they will come in and work in specifically tactical roles like SWAT operators or snipers. And that is certainly to increase the resources is something that should definitely be looked at.
So you don't have a problem with staying in Homeland Security overall?
I think staying in Homeland Security, if the problem's fixed, would be fine. I like the idea of being back in Treasury because Secret Service was run by the Director of the Treasury, and it would have more resources that they could focus on and make available to them, including the funding to do the job that they need.
From what you see from the shooter, do you think he wanted to survive? Did he want suicide by cop? He had, I guess, the ceramics to have a bulletproof vest. I guess he had his car right there. He didn't see anybody around. I mean, do you think this guy wanted to survive?
I certainly, in the mere fact that he took off and not engaged and continued shooting in any way, shows me that he wanted to get away, lived another day to commit more anarchy. Great job by the Secret Service agent on the ground that took the force to him and prevented it from occurring.
Well, I mean, what we know right now, he was able to have an AK-47 on a block in an upper crust area on the street, was able to pull that off. I get in between the shrubs and I guess just camp out there. Should there have been someone in that perimeter?
Well, one of the things I would have looked at is you have a fenced-in golf course. I would have had persons on the outside of the fence patrolling that area, make sure that no one is getting up close to the fence. I don't know if that was done, but clearly this person was able to bypass anything that might have been on the outside. We can't have that.
We know this about him. He did an interview with Newsweek Romania where he talked about with a flag shirt on. He talked about the need to fight in Ukraine. He looked to raise money for Ukrainian fighters. He had this brilliant idea of using Afghan fighters and putting them into the war in Ukraine. He says he couldn't get the right people there. He also bashed Trump repeatedly on X. Democracy is on the ballot and we cannot lose, he quotes. So again, if you were, you don't have to take a big leap to think that some of the statements against Trump were motivating crazy people like this.
Brian, there's no question the rhetoric needs to be dialed down. It does not serve anyone's purpose to be increasing all the anger that is out there, and especially for people that are mentally unbalanced. But let's be very clear here. There's a difference between being insane and not responsible for what you've done. This guy may be nuts, but he's not crazy to where he can't be prosecuted.
Right. He's not talking yet. He's going to be lawyered up soon. What questions would you ask him?
One of the things, the first question would be is, what were you thinking? Why? Why Donald Trump? What's your motivation in this? Other things we need to seriously look at is, who else did you work with? Anybody help you in this? Where did you get the resources, the money to buy the weapons, to travel from where you live to that location? How long had you been there? Let's find out who knew what, if there's anyone like that, and make sure we're interviewing them as well.
Yeah, his name is Ryan Wesley Ruth. He fled in a black Nissan after Secret Service agent fired shots after spotting him poking a rifle through. But the reason why they know who he is and his license plate is because a quick-thinking pedestrian was there and took pictures. I mean, it's hard to believe we have to rely on pedestrians. I know if you see something, say something. But if you didn't have that responsible person, this guy conceivably could have gotten away.
In fact, he could have gotten away. We also have a lot of cameras everywhere these days, so chances are we would have picked up something on video. But I love the fact that the American people are willing to help in situations like this, assist law enforcement. More cases are solved that way. More people are protected. And fortunately, things ended well, and we didn't have a tragedy like we had just 2 months ago.
You know, what's interesting is the local authorities did speak candidly about what they found right away. We usually don't get that from Secret Service. Here's Sheriff Rick Bradshaw yesterday. Cut one.
The Secret Service agent that was on the course did a fantastic job. What they do is they have an agent that jumps one hole ahead of time to where the president was at. And he was able to spot this rifle barrel sticking out of the fence and immediately engage that individual, at which time the individual took off.
All he could see was the barrel. Was that the right move, taking the shot?
You see a weapon pointing in the direction of the protectee, absolutely. You can engage that threat. I also love the fact that we're putting information out so that the public knows what's going on. At the same time, you want to protect the prosecution. Obviously, you're not going to hear the FBI or Secret Service talking about sensitive information. But let's get some basic information out there immediately, as opposed to the waiting game we saw a couple of months ago.
Look, we put up now we put up bulletproof glass before the president speaks in an outdoor rally, even an indoor rally. Are they going to tell him not to play golf for 50 days?
Well, I think there's a lot of things they might want to tell former President Trump, that he gets to choose what he wants to do. The reality is there are certain levels of risk when you're going to be in the public eye like this, and you want to control those risks. I think we can do more before we start reining anyone in and telling them what they can and can't do. Let's get more resources on the ground, outside the fence line, a larger perimeter, and working together with the local law enforcement.
John, from what you understand, I know you have a cyber expert, you're with the FBI cyber division. Has Iran been successfully hacked the Trump campaign?
There's no doubt in my mind that Iran, who has been hacking us for the longest time, would be interested in hacking the Trump campaign, looking into anything they can manipulate, etc. Iran's not alone. We have a lot of other countries out there, North Korea, China, Russia, who are interested in doing the same. But Iran has specific interest in Trump for Soleimani. It's obvious that they would like to do anything they could to hurt him.
Right. And if so far they don't look like they're behind us, but we don't know anything about the first shooter. And it was over 60 days ago. It's crazy. John Iannarelli, thanks so much.
Brian, thanks for having me.
All right, 1-866-408-7669. I see calls up there from New York, St. Louis, Illinois, and Fort Lauderdale. I'll get to them. But then we're going to go inside the way the media is handling this and some of the egregious things we heard from, shocker now, MSNBC.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I think these discussions about Haitians eating dogs and cats and other things needs to stop. We need to focus on what is important. What is important is that we get primary care health to everyone in a very growing city, that we do other things in regard to housing. These are kind of basic things that we need to do. We need to focus on those and not this discussion about Haitians eating dogs. It's just not helpful. And again, these people are here legally.
They're here legally because of the temporary protected status that this administration gave them, that Trump got rid of in 2018. You just can't go and say these three failed states, Cuba, Venezuela, and Haiti, okay, fine, you're just going to dump them here because their country's a mess? Is that fair? You don't tell mayors or governors? And believe me, this is bringing one thing about it, whether cats and dogs is true or not, and I don't approve of getting off the subject. This is bad enough, but nobody's paying attention to this until all of a sudden these stories and this video pops up about people possibly eating dogs and cats and arrests taking place and accusations flying left and right. But this is a story. There are 59,000 people there in 2020. There's more now. And then you add in 20,000 Haitians. It's created chaos in their town. They don't know how to drive. Not their fault. But if you're over 18, no driver's ed needed. So they're hopping in the car. A kid got killed. Other people don't want to be on the roads with them. They don't understand the signs. And the kids speak French. They go into school. No one has French Creole expertise, or not many, in Springfield, Ohio. Doesn't pay their teachers enough anyway. So it's created chaos. So why are you waiting to respond to J.D. Vance or a presidential debate? Why, as governor, are you allowing this to happen, not getting on Joe Biden to do something about it? Why are you leaving it to mayors and governors? And when they leave it to you, at least have the courage to speak up. But you're a Republican. I know you don't love Trump, but you're voting for him. But at least stick up for your own people in Ohio. Julie, listening to FM News Talk 97.1. Julie.
Hey there, Brian. We are drinking from a fire hose. There is so much going on.
I know.
We have got to focus. I love your focus, but we had this horrendous interview by Kamala Harris on Friday night. We are going to elect a president in 50 days. And so what do we hear about on all the Sunday shows? Dogs and cats. It is outrageous.
Right.
So I feel like we have got to press reset And we have got to air clips of this interview. No one saw it. It was buried from the internet.
I know.
She always chooses Thursday night before Labor Day, Friday night before a weekend. She does it on purpose. And we cannot let them beat us on strategy. And it's not even strategy. It's tactics.
I hear you, Julie. Thank you. Here's, by the way, just the reality is not going to allow it. People in Ohio know murders were up 81% over the last 3 years. Do you think you need J.D. Vance to tell them how bad it is? You shouldn't. Here's Kamala Harris when asked, how about new ideas? What do you think? Cut 19.
My approach is about new ideas, new policies that are directed at the current moment. And also, to be very honest with you, my focus is very much on what we need to do over the next 10, 20 years to catch up to the 21st century around, again, capacity, but also challenges.
What the hell does that mean? What are you talking about? You really don't demand more of an explanation about what separates you from Joe Biden? What are your new ideas to bring to the country? Ron, listen on WABC on Long Island. Hey, Ron.
How are you? So, look, you know, there's viruses spread medically, and then there was the computer viruses. And now we have this social virus that has made Trump a disease for some people, that because the news tells part of the truth, half the truth, they don't give you the whole story, it is causing people to actually want to kill others, to be unbefriend people. And this, although Abraham Lincoln, habeas corpus, only happened once, we at least have to bring to bear on the responsibility of the people who bring us the news and social media, that they have to bear legally some of the responsibility to become the right reporting outlets again. And they can't just be spewing half the truth and then say, oh, a redaction later. Sorry, we didn't mean that. When no one's going to know that. People just rely on
people. Here's an example, Ron. As soon as you get a question about cats and dogs, well, so you know that. Let's debate that. You can go on the ground. You're going to find that. I like to see reporters do that. But here's the bigger story. They have to absorb 20,000 Haitians in for no reason. This is a economically depressed area. Yes, they need some workers, but they are not equipped to handle 20,000. How dare you do that? Like they did in Aurora, like they do on Long Island, like they do when they tell these teachers, keep your mouth shut. Don't complain. You'll lose your job. And they're doing it in small cities in Texas. They did it one time. Ron DeSantis did it one time in Martha's Vineyard. These people had aneurysms, collective aneurysms. They couldn't handle it. Can you imagine how people in Springfield, what they do is they stick it in economically disadvantaged areas who have little political pull, and they dump them in these areas where teachers are already overworked and underpaid, and then they say, yeah, these kids don't speak English. Do the best you can. Oh, the neck tattoo? Don't worry about it. That's just the gang they belong to. Good luck with that. Seven separate states had this notorious Venezuelan gang taking over important parts of their city. That's what Joe Biden and Kamala Harris did.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
As of today, there is not one member of the United States military who is in active duty in a combat zone in any war zone around the world, the first time this century.
That is so wrong. Never fact-checked, causing outrage around the world. Because with the U.S. troops, the 2,500 in Iraq, the hundreds in Syria. I mean, it's just maddening. In fact, it was pointed out by Tom Cotton, Cut 24.
Kamala Harris's claims that there are no American troops in a war zone, I bet would come as a surprise to the thousands of troops we still have in places like Iraq and Syria that are getting repeatedly hit by mortars and drones and other attacks by Iranian-backed terrorists because Kamala Harris and Joe Biden have appeased and emboldened the Ayatollahs for 4 years. It would probably come as a surprise to all of the sailors we have in the Red Sea who are facing the constant threat of missile attacks from rebels and outlaws in Yemen that, again, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have turned a blind eye to, that they took off the terrorist list. Kamala Harris's lie about American troops not facing danger in war zones around the world is just one more example of why she's a weak, failed San Francisco liberal who is not up to the job of being our commander-in-chief.
And nobody says it better than Senator Tom Cotton. Bobby Brack joins us now from OutKick. Bobby, it's amazing that the fact of what's going on with the aftermath of the debate. Yeah, Kamala Harris might have been more composed and definitely exceeded expectations, and Trump missed some opportunities, but she was never fact-checked. She was never put on her heels. Can you imagine if they said, excuse me, Madam Vice President, that's not true, how she would have handled it?
You're right, Brian, and you're right. There's the presentation of her where you could argue maybe Harris was more composed than Trump. But then if you look at the transcript of what they actually said, there is actually a very stark contrast, because Harris lied and lied and lied, and she was never once fact-checked. From my calculations, ABC fact-checked Donald Trump 5 times. They didn't fact-check Harris even once, despite so many opportunities to do so, whether it be the Charles the Very Fine People hoax, the bloodbath hoax, lying about Donald Trump's stance on IVF and the national abortion ban. So ABC might think that they're doing the country a service by trying to elevate Kamala Harris, but all they're doing is misinforming voters to not understand how dishonest Kamala was up there on that stage.
Right. It's interesting. But when they went out and gave the interview after to say how they study Trump, they make immediate look biased. They don't seem aware that people already thought they were biased. Trump was extremely critical of him. Stephanopoulos just totally exposed himself on his show. One of the rare times he shows up, he's being sued by Trump to begin with, by Kamala Harris's best friend as president of ABC News. And then they go out there and unabashedly say, yeah, we were determined to fact check Trump.
Yeah. And Lindsay Davis, the co-moderator, she participated in this fawning puff piece days later by the LA Times and said, well, we came in with a plan to fact check Donald Trump because CNN didn't in June and Joe Biden didn't correct him on his lies. Okay, well, if you want to fact check Trump, fine. But you can't only do it one side. And Harris told just as many, if not more, lies as Donald Trump, and absolutely nothing happened. And what's even more egregious is that the Very Fine People and bloodbath hoaxes, those are already debunked. In fact, ABC's own website has said those statements are inaccurate, yet on debate night, not either one of the moderators was able to say, well, excuse me, Madam Vice President, that is actually not true.
You could even say when it comes to this tax reform, when they said it was for his billionaire friends,
yeah.
What are you talking about? 16%, they say middle class got 16% of their income increased because of tax money they were able to not have taken out of their checks. And I think the upper class got the least. They only got 1% off the top rate, which was too high to begin with. If you want to talk about double standards, we see the one-on-one that she does on Friday night. Nobody talks about a little cent she made. And don't forget Governor Tim Walz. Well, J.D. Vance is on the Sunday shows, 3 of them on Sunday. He has not done one to call his own background, to defend his own background, or defend anything going out there. Listen to what he did to in the one conversation he did have locally. Cut 26.
This thing's going to be a battle for the next 52 days. It's going to be in rooms, one in rooms, just like this. It's going to be one door-to-door, call-to-call, $5 donation, trying to have that hard conversation in the produce aisle with the person you saw there at the grocery store and ask, have you voted yet? Ask that person to sign up. Ask them to get the vote. Look, this is on. Wisconsin starts next week in voting. Next week.
This guy wants his voters to go up to people in supermarkets in the produce aisle and say, hey, where are you voting? How are you voting? Who are you signing up with? Is he nuts?
Yeah, this guy is such a goon. I mean, the positive for President Trump is that Harris picked this goof over Governor Josh Shapiro, who I think was a much more formidable candidate. But I mean, this Walz guy has embarrassed himself from the beginning. He left his troops in combat. He even lies about being a head football coach. No, he was an assistant. He put tampons in boys' bathrooms. He also lied about how he and his wife were able to have a child. So everything this guy says, you have to question about the sincerity and how much of it is just performative. But I heard that clip and was just wondering, is he out of his mind? Who does that and who encourages people to do that? And this is another politician who doesn't want to answer many questions. He allowed the state to burn in the name of George Floyd, did absolutely nothing about it, and now shows no remorse for that. This is a guy who we think is going to be the second most powerful person in the country. I don't know if I would trust this guy to run a minor league baseball team, let alone be the vice president of the United States.
I want you to hear some of the sparring that took place on CNN. And it's just crazy. So, J.D. Vance, he did Face the Nation. I think he did Meet the Press. And here's some of this State of the Union on CNN, Cut 31.
Started talking about feeding dogs and
cats.
You were the one who brought this up.
My constituents,
the president said it to
60
million people.
Eating dog and cats, and I talked about it because you were ignoring this community. My constituents talked about it.
Have you been to Springfield?
It is my responsibility to surface their concerns when the American media ignores it.
Have you been to Springfield?
Dana, I've been to Springfield probably 100 times in my life.
How about recently?
I've taken my children to get ice cream at Young's Jersey Dairy.
Have you heard recently since you've gotten these calls?
Have I been in the last 4 days?
No,
I haven't been in the last 4 days, but I've talked to a lot of people in Springfield, Dana, and they're telling me this stuff is happening. Dana, would you like to ask me questions and then let me answer them, or would you like to debate me on these topics?
And they went on to say, listen, I watch you sit down with Governor Waltz and Vice President Harris, and you gave them a walk in the park, no interruptions, multiple choice answers, and you just there to destroy him. Same thing with Kristen Welker.
You have to wonder at this point, look, the legacy media, as you know, has always favored the Democratic ticket. But they used to be defensive about it and didn't want to be too transparent about their biases. You have to wonder at this point if they just don't care, that their mindset is so one-fold to hurt Donald Trump's chances of winning the winning the election, that they just don't really mind if people know that they are in the tank for Harris and Walz, because it's so obvious when you just contrast the way they speak to the two candidates, and they don't speak to Harris and Walz all that much. She had the one sit-down interview with CNN, and she had the one softball on Friday, which, according to several reports, ABC6 edited to make her sound better and cut out some of her word salads.
Do we know that for sure, by the way? Because
So we do. So on their website, they uploaded one of Harris's answers on inflation, and the version that they aired on television was shorter on the topic of inflation. Now, they're claiming that it was more edited because of time, but it clearly cut out her just rant about inflation that had nothing to do with the actual answer. So by all accounts, they made her answer sound better than the one she actually gave.
By the way, they were terrible. Almost all of them, either edited or not, absolutely vacuous. And she was so nervous. Why are you nervous? I mean, what do you expect to be asked? Here's an example. After the number one story is the assassination attempt, the second one gets more serious the more you look at it, 300 to 500 yards away. The guy had a scope and an AK-47 out right outside. Nobody was really obviously expecting it. Coming up to the fifth hole at Mar-a-Lago. Listen to how his MSNBC's question and conclusion, cut six.
Do you expect to hear anything from the Trump campaign about toning down the rhetoric, toning down the violence, or would that be atypical of the former president?
Well, Alex, remember back to the assassination attempt on President Trump's life and how, you know, there was talk of a new tone, and it did seem like he was, you know, just trying to take it down a few notches. But then by the end of his convention speech, you know, we were kind of back to where we started.
So this is amazing to me that they're emphasizing the tone of Trump,
right?
Which, yeah, you could go bring that up. I mean, you could say things that are a little bit more sensible. Sure. Always since 2016, we could say that. But
yeah,
you look at the rhetoric on the would-be assassin's website, it's all about Donald Trump being a threat to democracy. He hates Trump. He's begged the other Republicans to stay in. Everything that's on there is negative to Trump, quoting Democrats. This should not be on the punch list of questions to go over the day of an assassination attempt, I wouldn't think.
No, of course not. And imagine that somebody believed every lie the Democrat Party and legacy media told about Donald Trump. If they believed all that, they would be convinced that this guy, Donald Trump, is the devil incarnate, that he is a real threat to not just democracy but humanity, that he must be stopped. Based on the wannabe assassin's social media pages, that's what he believed, because he believes everything that has been told about Donald Trump, and so much of it is a lie. When you constantly, meaning the Democrat Party and legacy media, when you constantly liken somebody to Adolf Hitler, that naturally causes anxiety, anger, fear, and forces people to act irrationally. Look, Donald Trump is far from perfect. His rhetoric at times is very questionable. But right now, given there's been two assassination attempts in as many months, he's not the one to blame for this. If anything, we have to look at the people who are radicalizing these very hateful Americans who want to go out of their way to murder the Republican nominee. This is not on Donald Trump. And anybody trying to blame it on him ought to be ashamed.
Lastly, there's no concrete investigation on ABC's side or whistleblower that we know of that's going to talk about possibly the stories about maybe Harris knew the questions ahead of time. Certainly the moderators have outed themselves, not thinking anything's wrong with it, talking about how they were determined to fact check it, Trump and not Harris. So we know this. We know Mark Penn has called for an investigation, including asking the phones of the producers and finding out who they were communicating with, possibly in the Harris camp. Do you expect anything to come of this?
No, because I don't believe the powers that be care. They're happy with the results. They're happy about the way it is perceived and ABC's role. So I don't expect much to happen, but I do hope that members of Republican Congress really try to push this, because anybody objectively watching that debate could tell there was a clear motive that night, and it was to help Kamala Harris win.
By Barack, OutKick. Thanks so much, Bobby. Great job.
Brian, appreciate it.
All right, back to wrap up the hour and go over some more things as we pursue the investigation, the latest on the assassination. We see another press conference going on right now. President Trump will be speaking to Mark Thiessen at some point today. He's going to be giving interviews. He's going to be on Wednesday. He's going to be in Uniondale, Long Island, trying to help out some of those battleground congressional seats. And they're already lining up way over the amount of requests have really transcended the capacity in that 18,000-seat arena. You listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
All right, I'm not giving up on all the calls, but I do think you need to know more, and here's where we go. Let's talk football. Dolphins, Tua Tagovailoa set to meet with neurologists earlier this week, as reportedly has no plans to retire after suffering a third concussion. Here's his coach.
I just wish that people would, for a second, hear what I'm saying, that bringing up his future is not in the best interest of him. So, you know, I'm going to plead with everybody that, you know, that does genuinely care, that that should be the last thing on their mind.
I don't know what he's talking about. People care. 2019, got a concussion. 2022, suffers back injury versus Buffalo, clears concussion protocols, returns to the field under questionable circumstances. It got somebody fired, by the way. Suffers another concussion the next game. October 1st, 2022, NFLPA fires the neurotrauma consultant who cleared him. Thursday, diagnosed with another concussion. We wish him the best. He's made a lot of money. He's a great quarterback. Miami's on the upswing. Next, Tito Jackson's dead. One of the Michael Jacksons, one of the Jackson 5. He had three sons. Evidently, this guy was a great guy. The Jackson 5, of course, he was famous when he was young and started to put out his first album just a few years ago. He is the older brother of the late Michael Jackson. Any thoughts, Allison?
I mean, it's a nice excuse to play some of the Jackson 5 stuff, of which we don't have. But, right. You know, otherwise,
plus,
it's
I mean,
sad,
should
but...
we be playing Jackson 5 stuff?
I mean, it's still good music, right? I mean, they put the Michael Jackson musical on Broadway. It sounds like people are, you know, never playing his things and forgetting who he was.
Oh, okay. Next, Tiger Woods is dealing with yet another injury revealed Friday. He's going under the knife once again to try to alleviate a back issue. Woods stated that he's been dealing with an ailment since most of 2024. He's now hopeful the procedure allowed him to return to normal life activities, including golf. The surgery went smoothly. Man, the guy's just falling apart. I thought it was his leg. No one's even seen that leg since the accident. You realize that? It was mangled.
That's true. Has he been wearing pants every time he's out
there? Yeah, I mean, you never see him. He was after the comeback, after the controversy, after the arrests and everything like that. Again, he was on his way on a comeback until that speeding away after being upset that his car was being held up by bad valet. Next, Twitter's brand valuation has declined 88% since Elon Musk acquired in 2022. Quote, Musk's controversial rebranding of Twitter has resulted in a dramatic, abrupt decline in brand value and strength. The hasty abandonment of the name Twitter has been disastrous since there was no plan to bring it up, since Google ranked as the number one media brand for the fourth consecutive year, followed by TikTok. Google was number one, and then Twitter X dropped out of the top 50. What do you think? People call it X now, though, right?
Yeah, they still call it Twitter, too, or they'll say X, formerly known as Twitter. I mean, I feel like it's a bit of a long sentence every time.
It's tough. It's awkward. Next. Snowflakeism is a problem. 75% of executives say most of the recent college grads they hired were unsuccessful. Gen Z employers are entitled to easily offended, lazy, and generally unprepared for the workplace. That is stunning.
It's not surprising, though. Are you really surprised by it? You're just
75%? Oh, my God.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.